what I'm doing is weaving the Frank Scully book of 1950, which I want to say to Coast listeners who go on the net and see these silly, it was all a hoax and it was all just somebody trying to sell oil and oil leases and all of the stuff that is not based in fact. You might as well have the public working for counterintelligence in the government the way it all spreads, and it is not based on fact. And I'm hoping tonight that this is going to be a really substantive reality check on the fact that the Frank Scully book, Behind the Flying Saucers, needs to be reread in depth in the context of all of this new research, and so does William Steinman's 1986 book, UFO Crash at Aztec, A Well-Kept Secret, which it certainly has been. And back in 1950, Frank Scully wrote that what he called Scientist X or Dr. G or G's, there was this one particular scientist who had talked to University of Denver students on March 8, 1950, a few months before Scully's book came out in September. And the scientist told the students that a saucer, quote, had landed less than 2 years previously to his talk on a site within 500 miles of Denver, close quote. And at my earthfiles.com website, I have really good maps that give you an orientation for where Aztec, Farmington, Denver, and the area that we're talking about is. Now, apparently, there was no local reporters there to record the talk, but Frank Scully found a detailed summary, maybe it was phoned in, to the Summerside Journal, published on Prince Edward Island in Canada. And on pages 24 to 28 of Scully's book, he writes about what he learned from the Canadian newspaper. And here are some quotes. The discs, Dr. G explained, had revolving rings of metal in the center of which there were cabins. The gears, which had no lubrication, were of a gear ratio unfamiliar to our engineers, and they thought the non-humans might have traveled by using the magnetic lines of force known to encircle planets of our solar system. There was not a rivet, nor a bolt, nor a screw in any of the ships. Their control boards were a series of push buttons. Their outer construction was of a light metal, much resembling aluminum, but so hard, no application of heat could break it down. There were two or three instruments which the scientists judged to be timepieces. It took 29 days for one instrument to make a complete circumference. This was their first clue that there might be something between the ship's means of propulsion and magnetism. Because a magnetic day is 23 hours and 58 minutes, which works out at 29 days for a magnetic month. Around certain areas of the Earth are places known to have magnetic fault zones. On this continent of North America, areas around the states of Oregon and New Mexico are known to have these sort of faultings. Also, atomic explosions might disturb magnetic lines of force, close quote. Well, whatever brought the large disc down at 5 a.m. March 25, 1948, William Steinman says he learned a UFO was picked up on U.S. military scopes by three separate radar units in the Southwest. One of the radars was high-powered, and it was on a mountain in the Four Corners area where Utah, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado meet, which is not far from the Aztec area. It seems that the radar beam had some effect on the central control system of the flying object. This is now Steinman reporting. For immediately, the craft seemed to go out of control. It fluttered and wobbled from side to side and appeared to take a trajectory toward the ground. Scott and Suzanne Ramsey have driven and flown many miles to interview eyewitnesses, some on their deathbeds, who had firsthand information about the Hart Canyon disk northeast of Aztec. And now Scott Ramsey continues about what eyewitnesses saw that early morning of March 25th, 1948, and could radar have interfered with the disk? Here is Scott.
And how does the radar installation or installations fit into why that disk might have come down in Hart Canyon?
I don't have the smoking gun on what would have brought it down. A microwave radar could certainly be on the list of things. I know Los Alamos was getting irate, as with Oak Ridge National Labs, of the close UFO sightings they were having. The historical reports of Alvado talk about the multiple UFO sightings they were having down at Los Alamos. Those reports were being sent to the AISS Air Intelligence Service Squadron. That's where the paper trail stops, so that's where the documents stop. Could the radar have affected the UFO that night, the flying saucer? The short answer is yes, I guess it could have. Could it have been shot down? There are documents where Los Alamos was actually asking for anti-aircraft defense in Los Alamos. They were told by Army and Air Force, no, you can't have it. You're an atomic energy lab, and no, you can't have it, but you ought to talk to the National Guard. Perhaps they can provide it.
What now is the strongest and best evidence that you have in firsthand eyewitness interviews about what happened, and what do you think is the closest date?
Everybody does agree that March 25th, 1948, there was a brush fire out there. When I say most people, people that were alive and I can document were living back then. And the brush fire is a key, because that's what forced everybody out to Hart Canyon, because of fear of the brush fire with the oil wells and the drip tanks.
Eyewitness testimonies.
Well, Ken Farley, everything he says as far as employment, who he worked for, his immediate supervisor, who he worked for, he brought up the date. He said it was March 25th, 1948. He was young. He was 19 at the time. He had just moved down to the oil field area of Aztec, Bloomfield, Farmington for basically a more exciting employment, because there wasn't much going on in Mancos, Colorado, which is about 40 to 50 miles away. You know, Aztec sits almost on the Colorado border. And he was employed by El Paso Oil. And his immediate boss was Bill Ferguson. He gets to Bill Ferguson's house before 5 o'clock in the morning. They were going down toward the Bloomfield area to check on some oil wells. And Bill Ferguson informs him, nope, we have a new direction we're heading. We're going out to Hart Canyon. I've got workers out there telling me of a possible lightning strike that set a brush fire up on a mesa. And it's awfully close to the drip tanks, our big storage tanks. Even today, it's not an easy drive out to Hart Canyon. It's 11.7 miles out to the northeast side of town on a very unimproved road. They get out there, and the oil field workers greet them and tell them that the brush fire is not any threat to the drip tanks. It'll burn itself out, or almost has. But what they need to see is a very large craft of some type. So they get up there, and here's this large lenticular craft laying on the mesa.